Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. We're talking NXT for March the 28th, 2023, knocking on the door of Stand and Deliver and WrestleMania weekend. So was it a good go-home show? I think so. I think that it did some pretty okay things to promote where we're headed here. Lots of little things bothered me on this show, like lots. And I don't know, maybe it's the fact that I'm not drinking that did that to me. I don't know, Nate, but...
What have I told you about watching wrestling sober?
I know. It's such a ridiculous thing, this pro wrestling thing that we all love. That maybe that's just not the best way to take it in, but nonetheless, that's what I done did, and we'll see how I felt about it. Maybe by the end of this, I'll be like, you know, maybe I'm just too negative. but if I haven't figured out a way to be less negative by now, then I probably never will. Let's talk main event segment. Grayson Waller out to sign a contract for something that is unsanctioned. The good news is the stupidity of that sentence is the only thing about this segment that I didn't like. Grayson Waller, of course, a great irritant. Well, I also didn't like that the fans chanted what, but this is a taped show and they'd already done a couple of episodes here. So I want to give them a mulligan. I just hate the what chant.
What?
So very much. Just don't.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
Not Nathaniel. So Grayson Waller picks at Johnny Gargano's scabs, until we get real weird camera work, which is not that strange. It is WWE, and they do stupid things with the camera, but they're mostly during matches. And here the camera gets set down, and then another camera angle catches the fact that the cameraman who just set his camera down was Johnny Gargano. I liked this bit of editing. I thought it was fun. And it seemed like a genuine revelation to the crowd. Now, to us watching at home, it was very obvious. We had a shot of the rear side of Waller just saying, come on, come on, at the ramp. So we knew something was going to happen behind him. And indeed, Gargano was one of the cameramen. And these two had a pull-apart brawl. Stand and Deliver is a mess. What I said is it's more of an employment program than a wrestling show because there's so many people on it. But I will say the build for this match has made up for the lack of build in almost every other single match where I feel like so much more could have been done than was done. But Nate, who I've already mentioned by name several times, tell me who you are and what you thought of this main event non-match.
Well, my name's David. Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT, which I do have up on pwtorch.com and the VIP section for you guys to check out if you want to see what I thought of the show. But then again, I'm here to talk about that too. So whatever. This was actually a really good segment. I agree with you. I think this is probably the best build going into Stand and Deliver, hands down. I'm curious to get your take too. Are you okay with the sanctioned match here?
That this is not unsanctioned?
Unsanctioned. Yeah, it is in terms of the stipulation for this match.
There is nothing that bores me more as a stipulation than whatever they want to call unsanctioned match, street fight. Yes. I give a mulligan to falls count anywhere because I like the idea of a fall happening somewhere really, really bizarre.
That's kind of where I'm at.
That's pretty much the only way I like this. But a street fight unsanctioned match, like brutality for brutality's sake, like nothing proven because so many weapons were used. I take nothing from them. I understand it as the stipulation for this particular match. And if any match can get away with it, it is this, because this is a storyline like a year in the making. So I almost want to give it a pass. But as a stipulation in general, I strongly dislike it.
Okay, I think we're pretty much on the same page then. Like last week, Bruce and I were talking a little bit about it. Yeah, he was a little bit more down on the idea of an unsanctioned match here than I was. And I can't disagree with him, because by being down on it, because for everything you just said, that they can be boring and whatnot. Here, I think if anybody can get away with it, it is going to be Johnny Gargano. A, it's his type of a match. He's had a couple of good ones and a couple lots of good ones, if memory serves. It's kind of like his match here in NXT anyway. But like you said, the build of this has been fantastic. And I trust, not only do I trust Gargano to try and make sure that this is going to be a good match, also Waller too, for that matter, but I also trust like NXT, Michaels and, booking, whatever, to kind of make sure that this is going to be a good, essentially send-off for Gargano. He never really got his official like NXT send-off, so I feel like this is kind of what that is. He's coming back here. He's gonna, I almost guarantee you, he puts Waller over. Why else would he come back to NXT unless he's gonna be staying in NXT for a little bit longer? Then I can see him going over here and then the feud continuing with Waller. But as far as like this segment here tonight, I really liked it. I liked the cameraman angle, the cameraman thing, where Gargano pretended to be the cameraman. I expected something to happen behind Waller. As you said, when the music hit, Waller was looking at the stage. I didn't necessarily expect it to be the cameraman at first. I kind of figured, jump out of the, he being Gargano, would jump out of the crowd an attack or something like that. But I like the fact that it's a cameraman. It's been done. It's been done many times before, but it's something I haven't seen in a while. So at that time, you can kind of bust it out again and people won't be going, hey, we've seen that before, or recently anyway. I give him credit for that. I do like the couple little, different weird, quirky camera angles that you mentioned as well. Not something I'd bring up on a weekly basis or anything, I thought they were kind of cool to add a little bit to the segment. Overall, I think this is a match I'm looking forward to going into Stand and Deliver. Looking most forward to going into Stand and Deliver. I think that's what I get to say about them apps.
If you want to call us, folks, you sure can. That is 515-605-9345. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We're going to talk with two of our regulars tonight and see what they thought. Let me first bring on from Cumberland. This is Ryan. Go ahead, Ryan. What'd you think of the show?
It was a fine show. I guess a nice show leading up to the Stand and Deliver premium live event.
Yeah, it's speaking of which, folks, we don't know who's going to be here for our report or for our show, which will not be a live show after Stand and Deliver. It's at a really weird time. You'll be where? I thought you'll be working, right?
Nah, dude, I'm on vacation until the 3rd.
Oh, well, snap. Yeah. So that's your out. I am working. Okay. So, at any rate, Stand and Deliver in a few days. So Ryan, would you, any specific thoughts on the show tonight?
My first question is on the Battle Royal that opened the show with Axiom winning. Do you think Booker T sort of ruined the Battle Royal by pretty much saying that Axiom was, he's talking to him, about him during the match. So I think everyone sort of knew then, after he made those comments, that he was going to be the odds-on favorite of.
I'm going to pick at Booker a couple of times tonight, like hard, because it's especially when he was real, real excited to call a move and he called it incorrectly. But I'll kind of – I don't know that I want to give him a pass here exactly – but I think that this was essentially spoiled by the fact that Axiom was the only logical winner of this match in the first place. I mean, he's the only one who had some kind of, it's not an issue, but he's got a thing with Wes Lee. Like, they've had face-to-faces. there's no way they're wasting their energy putting going into it, even brief face-to-faces backstage with Mackenzie Mitchell if Axiom's not going to be in this match. So I would have been absolutely stunned out of my mind if Axiom had not won this Battle Royal. This Battle Royal, by far the longest match on the show at 14 minutes and 28 seconds. Most of these guys, total cannon fodder early on, a couple of okay spots. But for the most part, the kind of Battle Royal that you could fast forward to the Final Four and really not have missed a whole lot. I thought it was okay. I'm not going to go hard at Booker here just because I thought it was going to be Axiom anyway, and I knew that going in. So let's swipe at Booker later, but I don't know about now. Nate?
Yeah, I can't say necessarily – okay, well, first off, I don't know if I heard the call that Ryan is necessarily referring to about Axiom. When I'm watching – you know, I've talked about this a couple times before. Like, I've got a little bit of hearing loss, and the tone of Booker T's voice is hard for me to hear when you've got the crowd going and all of that too. So sometimes I have a little trouble hearing him. But it's also like he – yeah, I mean, he goes off. He says some weird stuff. So it wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, maybe gave something away where he wouldn't. So, but I, like I said, where I didn't necessarily hear it, I can't really comment on that. However, you know, as far as Axiom goes, being the winner here, you know, he was certainly one of two people that I was thinking of that may win. The only other person that I thought of was Apollo Crews, and that's simply because they gave him an entrance to start. To start the show here tonight, which I thought was just a little strange. I figured maybe they'd show one or two, you know, but where they actually showed Apollo Crews and, you know, coming in and into the ring, I figured maybe there's like a 10% chance there. Right. But Axiom kind of seemed like he made the most sense to me. You know, he's had a couple, you know, backstage moments with Wesley and whatnot, as you mentioned. So it kind of did make the most sense. As far as this, you know, the Battle Royal itself went, you nailed it. You could just skip right to the Final Four here. Hell, the final three, really, Charlie Dempsey, Axiom, and
Nathan Frazier.
Thank you. We share a name and I couldn't remember it. You could skip right to that. And the final three were great, especially the final two acts. Even, you know, it just off the charts. I think they did a fantastic job here tonight. I thought it was a great way to end a Battle Royal. A lot of times, you know, Battle Royals kind of end either abruptly or, you know, not a super satisfying finish. I loved this. Like, they already had, I think it was a best of three they had. Like, let's do that again. I'm cool with it. I'd watch them all day.
Yeah, that was a best of that definitely got them both over. Win or lose, it did a lot for both of them, and they've both gotten their spots in these multi-man matches. And if there is one upside to multi-man matches, and there aren't a lot of them, it's that somebody who doesn't get to win usually comes out of it still looking like they won something and gained something out of it, and both Axiom and Nathan Frazier have done that. So yeah, I will say the one other guy that I considered as a possible winner was Dabba Kato. Not because he had any chance in this, this stand and deliver multi-man, but because he is the guy that can be a middle of the match irritant until all the guys finally decide, okay, if we don't take him out, we aren't going to be able to win. And they have to bury him under a bunch of rubble. So that was the only other thing I thought, but unfortunately, I already knew that it was going to be Axiom. It's possible I missed a Booker T line. I do try to miss a few Booker T lines if I can. So it's potentially I missed something here, but he is the one announcer where I constantly worry about him accidentally giving away something that has not happened yet, which was a big Mike Adamley thing. Like, he several times would say something and he knew the lines he had to say, but it's like he wasn't watching what was in front of him. And so he'd start promoting something based on a match result of a match that literally had not happened live. Not only that hadn't been taped, but had not happened yet. because he was a dope. Okay, anyway, Ryan, what else you got?
I have a question about Shawn Michaels. Do you think he started overstepping his bounds by playing doctor, by saying he wasn't going to allow Roxanne Perez the defender title at the Premium Live event on Saturday, but she pretty much had to beg Shawn Michaels to get that opportunity when she was already cleared by her doctor?
I actually liked this segment a lot. This was probably my second favorite segment in theory of the whole show. Potentially my favorite. One of my favorite things about it was what was left unsaid. This is a redo of a Shawn Michaels angle. When she pretend passed out after the match, it was like Shawn Michaels pretend passing out after the match with Owen Hart. And so, like, the subtext here is that happened to me and I didn't rush back and whatever it is. I thought, to the point where I thought they were going to show us flashbacks of this happening to Shawn Michaels, because for me, I couldn't not think of that moment where Michaels did that storyline, and how this is, everybody said, oh, Shawn Michaels is just doing his own storylines, but that led to a scene between Perez and Shawn that got them to this storyline. So in kayfabe, yes, Shawn is definitely overstepping his bounds trying to keep Roxanne from doing it, but I think what they're trying to accomplish is Shawn is trying to give like fatherly advice to Roxanne Perez and make sure she doesn't ruin her career before it's really begun. And Roxanne then, as a hero, has a hill to climb. So they kind of have their cake and eat it too. She's already the champion, but now she has to overcome her anxiety and her fears and everything else that's going on with her to give her another big win, even though she's already the champion, at Stand and Deliver. And I do think she will be winning. I can't imagine anybody else going over here. Tiffany Stratton would be a good champion for this brand. I just don't know how much longer she will be on this brand. Nate.
Yeah, I honestly feel like it's the obvious choice to see her retain here. Yeah, we talked about it last week, Bruce and I, you know, about her obviously somehow getting inserted into this match somehow, or her or Roxanne would kind of return after this match, and then they would have, like, you know, two women's champions and they'd merge the titles somehow, like an interim thing. You know, I could see we could have seen them doing something like that too. I like this way better. I feel it's a little bit more clean. And it's not like, you know, like that CM Punk John Cena rehash they did a few years ago, or, you know, something like the interim title they did with the cruiserweight title, you know, year and a half ago, or Jesus, I think it was a couple years ago now at this point. But I like the way they did this here. I think, like I said, you know, Roxanne Perez is probably going over. It makes the most sense to see her retain. This was an injury, you know, that kind of, I mean, obviously it was an actual legit injury that they weren't sure if she was going to be able to make Stand and Deliver. I don't think they disclosed what it was, but obviously once everything was fine, then, you know, she made it. So I this whole angle, and I think this whole, this ladder match for the title, is probably, I don't know if it booked just out of necessity, kind of last minute, because they weren't sure what she was going to be able to do, or if it was on the books the whole time. But I feel like, especially considering who's in the match, you know, we get Stark, Dolan, Stratton, Valkyria, and Hartwell, and obviously Perez, it nobody else really feels like it's their time to be champion in that match. Roxanne Perez is going to walk out victorious. I think it has a good possibility of being a standout. I don't think it's going to be like match of the night, but I think it should certainly be entertaining. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think there's potential there. And I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of women who are not ready for that match on the brand right now, but I think they got it pretty fairly whittled down to those who are. I will say it is a real shame that Sol Ruca is not in this match, because it seems like the exact kind of match that she should get a shine in. But I guess we're going to talk about her a little bit later anyway, because she was in a last chance match. Anyway, Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on the Schism Chase U stipulation. What exactly does that mean? If the Schism takes over Chase U, does Chase U have to join the Schism? Does that mean that maybe the students that are currently in Chase U are going to be new members of the Schism? I'm just a little confused on the stipulation for this match.
You know, if you're confused, I don't think that's anything to feel bad about, because they have not really made it clear. And I think the reason they're not making it clear is the Schism isn't winning this match. Not that Chase U wins a lot of matches, but I have no idea what it would look like for the Schism to win this. Now, there is the sub-story of Duke Hudson, and maybe he helps the Schism, and maybe then essentially Thea and Andre and Tyler are imprisoned by this group. But I think it's more likely that Duke Hudson overcomes whatever he's got going on and sees the true meaning of Christmas. I don't know what I'm saying. And he helps his brothers and sister in Chase U, and maybe he even gets the pin for him. I would say bait is more likely. You know, any of these four could get the win here, and it would be a feel-good moment. But I would say that I think the ending is going to be Duke Hudson pinning, let's say, Jagger Reed to finish this match. But I don't think they've lingered on what that would look like, because I don't think there's any chance it will happen. If it did happen, I guess my guess would be it would be something similar to the Legato and the Family situation, where they were in the group, but they weren't really in the group. So I don't think they're going to so quickly. As much as Sean likes to redo old storylines, I don't think they're going to do it that quickly, Nate.
No, I don't either. And that's exactly what I was going to compare this to, was the D'Angelo Legato storyline from like a year ago or however long ago it was. That's if Schism won, that's exactly how it, you know, I figured this would probably go. I don't, and you know, like you said, I don't feel bad, Ryan, because yeah, I'm confused too in terms of like what's going on with this whole thing. Now, granted, I'm confused a lot, so that's not saying much. But I don't believe they've really done a great job explaining this story and you know, exactly what the outcome would be if Schism did win. I mean, obviously, it seems like it's, you know, like it's for the university here, but you know, what does that actually mean for Chase University if they were to lose? I'm on board with you here. I think, on the same page rather with you here. I think it is going to be a Chase University victory. And I also think it's going to be Tyler Bate that gets the win. Because everybody in Chase University has just lost so many times. It almost feels like that's why they brought Tyler Bate in, is, you know, to be their guy. You know, they obviously that happened here tonight. You know, we saw him, you know, get a victory in the name of Chase U here tonight. I kind of have a feeling it might be the same thing, you know, might be the same thing at, Stand and Deliver. Overall, I think I touched on everything there. I don't think I have anything else to say.
All right, Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
Okay, final questions on this Sebastian character they had brought up weeks before, but we didn't really hear a whole lot about him this week. I know Sebastian was the name of Booker T's old manager in the Global Wrestling Federation that played the real geeky guy that sometimes wrestled, even won by luck. Any chance that the Sebastian character is code for Josh Briggs?
I have vacillated between whether I think that this is Josh Briggs or whether I think that Briggs Jensen's real first name is Sebastian, and Brooks Jensen's real name first name is Sebastian, and he just doesn't want to tell anyone. I'm amazed this storyline is still going on. And they lost. They're not in Stand and Deliver. Do you know how hard it is to not be on the Stand and Deliver card? I mean, it basically just takes picture ID to be on this card, and yet they are not on the card. Well, that is, the women are, but the men aren't. And I actually predicted that they would lose this match because that was the best way to move this story forward. But I really hope that somehow they pay it off at Stand and Deliver. On the other hand, Stand and Deliver kind of has a lot of matches, and they all have a lot of people in them. So I'm afraid it's going to be a real, real long show. But I don't know. If not Briggs, then who? I guess it could be a debuting character, but the idea of it just being another man really does seem... It just kind of is a flat ending to me. But on the other hand, it would be an ending, and I just want this to end. Tom?
I'm not no, Tom, but, Tom. That's fine. That's
every
fine.
Week, every Wednesday I talk to Tom, but it's Tuesday night, folks.
Yep.
Playing the part of Tom tonight will be Nate. So go ahead, Tom.
So, yeah, I'm pretty much there with you. I've kind of gone back and forth on whether it's Briggs or somebody else myself, and I feel like that's the most satisfying conclusion, right? Like, you know, all of us have mentioned how Briggs is the standout. Josh Briggs, Brooks Jensen. Yes, Josh Briggs is the standout of the two. You know, and Jensen is kind of the one holding Briggs back, I feel like. So I really would like to see the two of them split up and see what Josh Briggs could actually do as a singles competitor. I see something in him, and I think they do too, where I kind of feel like he's almost being wasted at this point alongside Brooks. So having, you know, him be Sebastian, or, you know, maybe, like you said, maybe it's his middle name, his first name, maybe it's just he really likes the Little Mermaid and that's just a code name that they're using. I don't know. But whatever it is, if it turns out to be him, I feel like you said, it's the most satisfying conclusion. It would get the two of them. It would split that, you know, that tag team up, and then, you know, we'd actually be able to see what, both of them, but mostly Briggs, could actually do as a single. So I'd be on board with that. I also was just looking up Briggs for the first time. I haven't really like looked into him before. And I didn't realize he got his start like in my neck of the woods. I may have actually seen him like wrestle a couple indie shows in the past and didn't even realize it.
There are too many wrestlers out there to remember them all.
Yep.
I saw Darius, not Darius. I still think of him as Airwolf. One of the brothers on AEW, and I feel bad that I don't remember his name now, because I like him, and it's going to come to me, and I'm going to be mad at myself because I have seen a lot of him, but I know him as Airwolf because I saw him wrestle under a mask when he was like 16, 17 years old, and then wasn't able to put that together until a little bit later, but that's how it goes. You know, Sebastian, the idea of Little Mermaid cosplay, you say that, and I'm like, yeah, they could do that in this storyline, and it wouldn't seem out of place. Like, this whole thing is so bonkers. I mean, they won't do that because it's, like, Disney-related, and you can't do Disney stuff without Disney's backing because...
Unless Disney buys WWE.
Which,
I'm just saying.
I mean,
could happen.
They own most things.
Right?
So it's possible. But the idea of Brooks Jensen...
Undertaker
in
versus Darth Vader, book it.
Yeah. The idea of him in a great big Sebastian suit doesn't make me unhappy. I that could be just an amusement. Like, they keep putting him in really stupid positions that are way out of his ability to really deliver on an acting level. But the guy's got just so much enthusiasm for it that, I mean, that dopiness is infectious. Like, he's not good at it, but he's a good kind of bad. I don't know how that makes sense. I don't know how he is better than the sum of his parts. But I want to cheer for the guy. And he's a good Twitter follow. That's part of it. This is just somebody you want to cheer for. That's the best and strangest thing I can say about him. I know what you're saying about these guys splitting. I know what you're saying about maybe them having something with Josh Briggs. But I also think that mid-card, gatekeeper, babyface tag teams they can use for 5 to 10 years are valuable. And I think they have that here. So if they're going to split them, I hope they proceed with caution. But anyway, let's go just slightly down the road to Baltimore and talk to our friend, Reverend Keith. Keith, if you can hear me, go ahead and say hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Keith, I'm doing well. Thanks for waiting, and I hope it wasn't too long.
First, Kelly, when you give me a send-off tonight, give me a warm send-off, because last time we was on the SmackDown show with you and Tom, and I told Tom to talk to you about this. You answered my third point, but you just went to the next caller, so... Yeah, just, you know, because I'm so used to the send-off, I was shocked.
Oh, God.
I forgive you.
Wow, that is not like me. I can't believe I didn't do that. Okay, I've written down the words warm send-off, so it's going to be hard for me to miss. Sorry about that, Rev. I'm a big fan, so go ahead.
No problem. None of us are perfect, man. But listen, I want to touch on the Roxanne Perez, Shawn Michaels segment, and I wish Doc Bruce was on here because he and I had a difference last week. If Nate recalls, he was saying that he thought that they would have, like, similar to the, I think it was the Punk Cena from 2011, where he thought that they might do something on the Tuesday NXT after Stand and Deliver and have her come out and challenge the winner. And I kept saying that I felt that she would be inserted into the match, and my prediction is that she will retain her titles, which you and Nate have already discussed with Ryan. But, yeah, I could see that last week on the show that they were setting it up for it to be a dramatic comeback for her, kind of like how Shawn Michaels came back, like you said, after that Owen Hart situation in 96. But I'm happy for Roxanne. I think it's going to be a good match. I was shocked to see Indy get the win tonight. I thought sure it was going to be Sol Ruka, but I think they wanted to reward Indy Hartwell because she's been in NXT longer than those other girls. And what were your thoughts on her win tonight and also the fact that it seems like they're burying Ivy now? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's going to be hard to say my thoughts without saying anything you just said. We feel exactly the same. I think that not using Sol Ruka in this kind of match, in this ladder match environment, is just such a miss. I know there's plenty of time.
Yes.
I know that Saul's going to be on this brand for a long time. She just got there. And 2 months ago, 3 months ago maybe, she wasn't even really that good. And she's already really quite good. She's got one of the fastest growth trajectories we have seen in a long time. I want to say Bianca, but she kind of got it right away. She was sort of like Kurt Angle in that way. But somebody like Alexa Bliss, bad in her first match, but not for very long. Sasha Banks, not great in her first two or three matches, and then very good very soon after. So kind of along those lines, just to take it all the way back to that. So it's a miss, but I also understand she's going to get her shine. And it's clear how much they like her. So if they don't want to waste her in this kind of match yet, and if she's not going to be the person that they elevate, then they might as well see what they see. So with Indy, I thought, I guess she might win just for that reason of it's not all about, like, it should just be a meritocracy. And in NXT, they don't usually treat it as something where you've been around, it's your turn now. But Indy has, we know she's worked a really long time. We know she's done everything she can to get better, and her progression has been slower than most. She was never, I don't know if she was ever as clunky as, as, let's say, Sol Ruka in her first match, but she's also not as good as Sol Ruka is now. She's just been a really, really slow progression to kind of be where she is, which is a decent, I don't know. She could be a babyface or a heel gatekeeper, somebody who is a threat but who always loses, basically like a late career Big Show or Kane, I think she could do for a very long time. Or if you want to just compare her to a woman on the main roster, somebody like Carmella. Carmella gets into those matches. She doesn't win them. Or even Natty Neidhart.
Natty, yeah.
But, yeah, let's say Natty, because I think she's going to be more, because Natty doesn't visit that main event scene very often, but they make her an irritant to that main event scene fairly often. So let's take her there. So nothing here shocked me, other than the fact that, I mean, Ivy's counting the lights again, and she has improved. She was just atrocious on the mic when she got there, and now she's gotten to the point where when she's in there talking to the Creeds, she doesn't look like she's out of her depth anymore. She actually sounds like she can carry her part of that scene. And in the ring, I liked her at the beginning because I just like some of the power stuff that she can do that women her size just cannot do. So I've been kind of cheering for her to get better since the beginning. Maybe they think she's a long-term project, but it's unfortunate that she just ate two pins and isn't going on to that ladder match. So hopefully you got something out of that that you didn't already say, but we're in agreement. Nate?
Yeah, there's not much there that I can't agree with myself. We kind of start with Indy Hartwell. Like you said, I mean, she's been there the longest. And I forget which one of you guys said it, but you know, they might just be kind of putting her on the spot here, just, you know, because she has been there the longest. To reward her for, you know, being there. Yeah, I think it was you, Keith, that said it. To reward her for being there. I think from a booking perspective, it kind of also sort of makes sense. You know, by looking at who's in the match, assuming Indy is a heel, and I feel like she's kind of been leaning heel lately, it's going to be four heels, two faces in the match, which I feel like is it's kind of a good place to be for a ladder match and kind of this caliber. It's going to really, you know, make it seem like both Lyra Valkyria and Roxanne Perez have to fight from underneath to actually have any chance of winning these titles. So I'm kind of a
I think you muted yourself.
I don't know if we muted him or if we just lost him.
Am I here?
Yeah, thanks.
You are here.
Oh. Yes, we hear you.
Okay,
we hear you.
That was weird. All right, that's weird. Nothing happened. I was just talking, and then all of a sudden, you guys couldn't hear me. So that's weird. So anyway, I was saying with Sol Ruka, I agree with what you guys are saying there too. You know, she came in, she was definitely green, but you know, you could still see something there, especially with her finish. Also, you're kind of viral on social media, things like that. There's definitely value in her, and I think that the company sees that too. I think they might just be waiting until after Stand and Deliver to maybe pull the trigger on her and kind of give her some more time to shine. You know, right now, remember, we're kind of like we're about to go into a reset period. We're going to see a whole bunch of new feuds coming out of Stand and Deliver or starting after Stand and Deliver rather. So you know, she could certainly fit into that mix. And if there's anything else that I forgot to touch on, we'll just blame my brain and its forgetfulness.
All right, Keith, go ahead.
Now, let's move on to the, a fatal five-way for the North American Championship. I like the way they put these guys together. You have your high flyers, you have your technical wizards, you have the guys that can sell, you have your high spots. The way they've been building up Wesley, I would not be surprised if he does retain, but personally, I would like to see Dragon Lee get that belt. What are your thoughts on how this match may be booked on Saturday?
So it's weird. I see all these matches, all these different challengers, like in most matches, a ton of challengers. And then when I run through all of the matches in my head, I'm predicting retentions for everyone. I know that can't be what they do at Stand and Deliver. It can't be. So I got to be wrong about at least something. In the main event, I'm picking Braun, but that's only because Braun's not ready for the main roster and Carmelo Hayes is. That's the only reason that I'm choosing that way. As far as this North American Championship match, I don't know. I don't know that there's more for Wes Lee to prove on that brand either. I worry about how that dude is going to be used on the main roster, but I think that they've gotten from him what they need out of him. Like I don't know what else he needs to work on and what else he needs to perfect. The only reason to hold him back would be because we don't have a storyline place for him right now. I don't have another reason to hold him back from the main roster. My position would be Dragon Lee as well in terms of what I want. I think any of these guys could handle that championship and have great matches aplenty with all kinds of guys. This is, I really think, an awesome assemblage of dudes for this match, and I can't wait to see how it has worked. I'm relieved that I won't be live recapping it, although depending on what we have available, I might be recapping it on delay anyway, so who knows. But I'm a big fan of Dragon Lee. I've seen a lot of him. He was never a regular in New Japan, but they brought him over pretty much once or twice a year for longer tours, like the Best of the Super Juniors, and I think he was probably in at least one Super Junior Tag League. I'm not 100% sure of that. But yeah, I've seen enough of Dragon Lee to absolutely love him. I don't know what they're going to ask of him on the mic. I don't know what he's going to be capable of on the mic. I'm interested in that because I haven't heard him do a lot of that kind of thing, but I can see him speaking in the ring. So I'm excited about that. But if he doesn't win, I'm not going to be saddened by that because they can have him start his journey toward that championship, even if he doesn't win that championship on the show. I find myself okay with just about any outcome here just because that mid-card, it doesn't seem like it's very top-heavy in NXT right now. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of guys fit to be on that level, but it seems like it's a great, great time to be a fan of the North American Championship scene, Nate.
Oh, it absolutely is. I'm right there with you. I don't think I will be disappointed no matter which way this match goes. Looking at, you know, everybody in the match, you've got Axiom, you've got Ilya Dragunov, you've got Wes Lee, you've got JD McDonagh, you've got Dragon Lee. All five of them, I feel like, would make a great North American champion. And they probably make a case for all five of them to win the title here. You know, Dragon Lee, I feel like if he does win the title, it'd be a great way for him to debut. That's his debut match. So a great way for him to actually debut. Especially if they want to push him to the moon. Since we haven't seen Cameron Grimes, they got to push somebody to the moon, right? So if they want to do that, like, I feel like that'd be a great way to do that. I'm predicting Wes Lee to retain here. I feel like his rise to get to this point has been just so, I guess, organically good. I've talked about this before. I haven't mentioned this in a while, but, you know, when Wes Lee was part of MSK, that was MSK, right? MSK, those are the right three letters, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he was part of MSK, I could care less about MSK. I'm like, I could understand why people got into them. They had a decent presentation. They were great workers. I just didn't click. Didn't work for me. But watching Wes Lee try to figure out who he is as a singles competitor and watch him kind of take his journey to become North American champion and now a fighting champion, I love it. I'm here for it, and I want to see him retain at Stand and Deliver. And you know, again, just be like, look, I did it. I'm the underdog. I did it, and I'm still the champ. And then, you know, all four of the other guys in the match, you can still have them try and fight for the North American title. It doesn't have to be the end of the angle for any of the guys here. But I think, for me anyway, the biggest feel-good would be seeing seeing Wesley retain the prettiest title on the brand.
All right, Rev Keith, what else do you have for us?
Well, I do want to say that that would be a delight either way it goes. I'm a Ring of Honor guy, and I've had the privilege of being around Dragon Lee quite a few times. And he's a nice guy, first of all. But secondly, man, he is just awesome to watch him, to just view his flips and his dives and his tope contios and tope suicidas in front of your very eyes. You know, I've been in the front row at many a show here in Baltimore, and just to watch him move like that, he's just so fluid. So I'm glad that Dragon Lee is now in WWE, because more eyeballs will be on him. Whether he wins the title this Saturday night or somewhere down the road, you know, WWE has plenty of opportunities to showcase his talent. And so if you guys are not followers of Ring of Honor, then you're in for a treat, because Dragon Lee has a lot to offer the WWE universe. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I have jumped on and off of Ring of Honor more times than I can count. I have seen some of his matches there, but almost every match of his I've seen is in New Japan. I would say I've probably seen about 40 to 50 singles matches of Dragon Lee, which is not nearly the number he's done, but it's probably more than most WWE only, more than all WWE only fans have seen. But yeah, they're in for it. And I'll tell you what, like, I don't necessarily need for a guy to be a specifically nice guy to be a fan of him, but I always love hearing it. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes. He and Roosh, his brother, you know, Dragon Lee and Roosh are brothers in real life. They are very nice guys. And Roosh, you know, he comes off as real arrogant and cocky, but behind the scenes, he's a fun-loving man. You would love both of those guys, man. They would give kids the shirts off their back if they could, you know?
That's awesome to hear. And I can't believe I didn't know until right now that they're brothers, because I've seen a lot of both of them. It's amazing what you can learn doing a podcast. What side of it you're on.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't hear Rush at first, and I thought he said Rusev, and I was very confused.
Rush, R-U-S-H. Yeah.
I was very confused.
Yep.
Yes. Well, last but not least, I do want to say that I think Stand and Deliver will be a very nice show. I'm going to go against the grain and say that I think Carmelo Hayes will win Saturday. But I can see what you were saying, Kelly, that you feel as though Carmelo could lose and then be called up to the main. It's just that with the story that they're telling with Carmelo's rise to the top, it seems like the fitting end would be for him to capture the belt. But on the other hand, he is main roster ready, whereas Braun is not. So we will have to see. The only way I could see Carmelo losing is if Trick turns on him. And that's yet to be seen. But right now, like I said to Doc Bruce and Nate last week, it looks like they're preparing Carmelo Hayes for a babyface run, because he's been very complimentary of Braun, unlike any of the other opponents he's had in his tenure on the NXT roster. So it's going to be a good main event. I'm more excited for Braun's title defense against Carmelo than I've been against any of his other opponents to date. So I think if nothing else, this match will stand and deliver. I think the women's match will stand and deliver, and also Johnny and Grayson. That'll be a match to be told. And so thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll speak to you again next week.
Sounds good. And,
good to hear from you, man.
And I will give you a warm send-off in just a minute. So we're – I'm excited for this match because I know what it's going to be as a match. I'm not excited because of the build, because the build hasn't necessarily been there, but I think that's partially the problem is that they've got Carmelo essentially working babyface, and so it's not making this feud pop because they're showing so much respect for one another. And I'm glad that you brought up the angle of Trick potentially turning, because That's what I've been seeing nonstop on all these little moments they've been having in the last few shows. Trick kind of going over Carmelo's head with what he was doing. It was last week or the week before. And then this week was a tiny thing where Trick wanted to keep partying and Carmelo wanted to get real and get down to business and get ready for the match. So if Carmelo's losing, I think that that's going to be part of it. This is one of those weird situations where I want Carmelo to win because he's the better worker and he's the one that I want to see on top of the one American promotion that I never miss a week of. But I also want to see him lose because I want him to get that bag because he deserves it and because he's earned it. And Braun is still just kind of Braun. I'm interested to see how the match has worked and what could be the angle with Trick. And I'm interested to see how long this match will be because Braun goes out there and he has fights. Like, he's not going out there and having the 20-minute main events of Shinsuke Nakamura or Finn Balor or Adrian Neville. He's going out there and he's having 8-minute main events and getting business done and occasionally up to 12 minutes, but that's about it. But Carmelo, I think this dude could go 60. So they're not going to do that. They're not going to do anything crazy like that. I'll be surprised if this eclipses 20, but I'll be very interested to see how much time this gets because it's not something they do for old Rex Steiner. And I will throw to Nate, but not before mentioning that it was once again another wonderful call from Reverend Keith of Baltimore. One of the best callers in the podcast game this week or any week. I love this dude. I'm glad he's here, and I can't wait to hear from him again. Nate, what do you think?
Thank
you. I feel like Keith needs his own entrance music.
I don't know that Keith would demand entrance music, but I'm sure it would be good if he had it. Thank you.
I'm just saying. Just saying. Anyway,
thank you.
Keith, good to hear from you, man. All right. I'm actually, this is probably the most excited I am for a Braun Breaker title match. I believe Keith said that as well. And not to say that means I'm super excited about it, but I am more excited about it than most. You know, Carmelo is, I think, probably his most interesting competitor so far. I feel like, and I don't know why we never really talked about it very much. You know, Carmelo and Braun, you know, finally clashing for the title. I know we've mentioned it and all of that, but like Carmelo finally being the one to dethrone Breaker, it just makes so much sense to me. The two of them had so many parallels in their career as NXT 2.0 was a thing and kind of becoming a a brand again, and they were getting their feet under them as that, but you know, the new iteration of NXT that's now the old iteration of NXT. But the two of them, they basically were the staples of the men's division. So kind of like, it's a lofty comparison, but kind of almost like Rock and Austin, so to see them kind of come together here in this match, I feel like is almost the culmination of that original NXT 2.0 class. And I would love to see Carmelo Hayes actually get the title, turn babyface, have a halfway decent run with the belt, maybe not as long as Breaker did, but, you know, give him like a 6-8, 8-10 month run or something like that, make it strong, and then bring him up to the main roster where he belongs. But, you know, like I said last week to Bruce, I want to see Carmelo Hayes do for the NXT title what he did for the North American title. For months and months, the North American title felt like the most important thing on the show, and as far as the men's division anyway. While Braun Breaker was still the NXT champion, and, you know, I mean, hell, we've talked about it 1,000 times. We forget who the hell the NXT champion is unless we're actively talking about it. Whereas Carmelo Hayes, who's the North American show? Oh, it's Melo, you know, like we'd automatically know that just in any conversation. So I would love to see him, like I said, have a babyface run with the title, allow the fans to just kind of embrace him, build that NXT title back up where it's kind of, I don't know, at least in my opinion, it's lost some of its luster. And, you know, then go where he, go up where he belongs and, you know, fingers crossed they use him right up there and he has a hell of a career.
Okay. You know, just because I don't know where else I'm going to say it, Booker was so excited in the main event when D'Angelo and Stax pulled off a doomsday device. He said that he yelled doomsday device three times in a row. Doomsday device didn't happen. What makes it even better is that the move that did happen was a demolition decapitation, a move that was by not only not LOD, but the tag team that was
fake
created
OD.
To be a fake LOD and a name that was meant to sound kind of like the LOD name. Like they were a ripoff that they weren't even trying to pretend wasn't. Folks, don't get me wrong. I really like Demolition. I think that they brought something to the table, even though they were made as kind of a petty answer to something that already existed. I have met Barry Darso, he who played Smash, a few times in my previous life working at Best Buy. He's a good guy. I talked to him a little bit about wrestling. But I did not talk to him about Repo Man because I have heard that he does not like to talk about his time as Repo Man, even though I absolutely loved him as Repo Man. Anyway,
I always forget it's the same guy.
Oh, yeah, it's him. And like, if you need a reminder, it's the big eagle tattoo on his shoulder. Not his shoulder, his bicep, whatever. So anyway, yes, in that main event, if you, too, were wondering, is that Doomsday Device named for a couple other things? No. What they did was the demolition decapitation. Okay. So, got that out of the way. We kind of covered this. Tyler Bate versus Von Wagner, 403. I don't know what else there is to say about either of those guys at this point. I mean, Bate is, like, in the shortlist conversation for my favorite wrestler anywhere. But right now in this role, I'm just kind of waiting for him to do something cooler. Von Wagner, I'm waiting for them to do anything even uncool with him. Because it seemed like they were heading somewhere with the Von Wagner thing with Mr. Stone saying, help me help you. And then he just kept losing and nobody's helping anyone. I don't know. I don't know that there's going to be anything there. So let's talk Hank Walker and Drew Gulak. 5 minutes and 50 seconds. This was pretty okay. Hank Walker is not always in the right place. He needs some work in there, but that's why a guy like Drew Gulak is in there with you, because Gulak is a wonderful in-ring performer who has gotten his on the mic as well in recent years, which I didn't know that would ever happen for him, but it happened. I really dig Gulak. I think he's got a long – I think he's a lifer in this business. I think he will bring something to wrestling for the rest of his life. I just respect that guy so much and what he's able to do. I think that Walker has benefited so much from this storyline, a storyline where he's guaranteed basically to lose every match heading to where he's going, unless maybe – he beats Gulak. I loved the little in-match storyline that he did here tonight where Gulak would do a move to him and then Walker would reverse and do the same move to him. What I didn't like was that Vic and Booker didn't sell this. They didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about the fact that he had learned all these moves from Drew Gulak and was doing them right back to him. But yes, that was a match. And I guess I don't need to roll that in with anything else. What did you take from the saga of Gulak and Walker?
So a lot of what you already said, I'm pretty much would wind up echoing, so I'm not going to really take the time, but, I'm really impressed with Hank Walker and how he's come along from his debut to now. I don't know if maybe he was intentionally trying to you know, maybe come off like a bit more of a bumbling idiot, for lack of a better term, you know, before he donned the singlet and was still kind of just the security guard turned pro wrestler. But he's certainly come along. I've really appreciated, like you said, you know, him, that kind of that in-match story of him just kind of move for move reversing and everything that Gulak showed him how to do. He was basically just saying, yeah, like, hey, you know, the student's here. And, you know, it's a bit of a shame he didn't get the win, but at the same time, like, you know, hey, Dempsey, I think it kind of furthers that storyline, you know, there with Dempsey and, you know, Gulak. But yeah, you know, like I said, nothing more that you didn't mention, so we can move on.
All right. We have touched on just about every match that happened. There were two in the middle of the show that we did not really cover. Valentina Feroz versus Electra Lopez, 203. This is built out of the mini story that these two were doing with Electra really trying to make Valentina go heel, but Valentina didn't take the bait. And even later out with Brass Knuckles. I have been deeply critical of Electra Lopez. Tonight was a very good night for her. This match was only 123 seconds long, but Electra looked really good in there. I had been bullish on her progression on the mic, so when they finally put her back in the ring, I said, cool, now there's something to look forward to. If they waited this long, there's no way they're going to put her in there, and this is going to fall flat. And it was real bad. It was real, real bad. And tonight, she went in there, and these two were spirited. They packed like 4 minutes of action into a two-minute match, and I felt like positioning was good. Footwork seemed okay. And, gosh, I can't gush enough about this short little mid-show match where Electra really was present and everything hit right. And I'm so happy with the way that this match went. And I hope that when they give her a 4, 5, 6 minute match again, I don't know if she's ever had a 6 minute match, but however long minute match, that keeps happening because this was a real step in the right direction. The other one we didn't talk about was Eddie Thorpe versus Miles Bourne. 301, Eddie Thorpe goes over after extended offense from Miles Bourne. Now, Miles Bourne is somebody that Tom Staupe loves on Level Up and has talked about him, and I know this. So I was actually pretty surprised to see him I knew his face, but I didn't know his work. And he gets thrown into this match, and he's just enhancing. He's in a Dante Chen role. He gets some fun, cool offense in the beginning. And by the way, Dante Chen was the only early elimination in the Battle Royal who actually got like a little showcase. So that made me happy, even though he got 19th place out of 20. But yeah, this Eddie Thorpe, this is a guy I'm very familiar with. He was Carl Fredericks in New Japan for quite a while. He was there as a New Japan, as a young lion, went through that system. He won the Young Lions Cup, where all the young lions are in a round robin tournament. He lost one match, but won overall on points, going 6-1 in the tournament or whatever it was. And I like him. And Tom has not liked what he's seen so far on Level Up. It doesn't seem like an active dislike. It seems like Tom just kind of finds him boring. And I'm just wondering what he's doing there and what they're teaching, because there's a different style from Strong Style to the style of North American wrestling and WWE in particular. But I think that Carl's kind of energy could work in NXT. Also, it's worth noting that Carl graduated the Young Lion program not that long ago. So he didn't have all that many matches outside of the Young Lion constraints. Because when you're a Young Lion, you're only allowed to use a small amount of your moveset. You have to master all the basics before you're even allowed to do anything else. So a Young Lion goes out there, he does like 8 to 10 moves. Like, that's it. There's just real basic stuff. They can suplex, they can Boston Crab. They can do, you know, basic punches and kicks and stuff like that and chops and palm strikes, but there's not a lot they're allowed to do. Even then, it's really interesting that you can see who's good and who's not. Like, I have picked way more often than not who's going to be a good performer and who's not, just because there's timing you can't fake. There's just little things, and I don't have to explain this to wrestling fans. You get it already, even if you haven't seen New Japan. But I'm interested to see how he's going to translate. I really like his entrance with the smoke rings. I think that's cool. I don't know if they'll explain his gear. I hope they do. I assume that he brings his Native American energy to a lot of his stuff, so I assume it's related to that, but they haven't told that story yet. Seemed like the crowd was receptive to him, already knew who he was. But yeah, at this point, you're going to think I'm on the take because I am going to be a big advocate for, I'm going to say Carl Fredericks, but I mean Eddie Thorpe. And I'm going to be his biggest fan. And if that ship sinks, I'm going to sink with it. Nate, on those two matches, and talk for a second because I got to take care of something with the kid here.
Well, okay, sounds good. So with Eddie Thorpe, I'll be the first to say I have not seen any of his stuff, you know, New Japan or anything. I don't really keep up with New Japan the way I probably should, because like anytime I sit down and watch New Japan, I'm like, this is freaking awesome, and then I just never go back to it for some reason. But anyway, really, really looking forward to see what he's going to be doing here. I like what we had here tonight. His match, I like to call this the NXT squash match, where the person that you know is going to be going over actually doesn't get nearly as much offense as you think they're going to, but it's still a very short match and makes them look strong. Anyway, that's really what we saw here tonight. Don't have a whole heck of a lot more to say on this match that he didn't already bring up. I really do like the presentation, the music, the entrance, you know, the video and smoke rings and all of that. I actually wasn't aware he was, you know, had Native American heritage. Like I said, don't know too much about the guy. So I'm assuming that's probably, you know, that makes sense if that is what he's bringing into his gear there. And then with the other match, which was the women's match,
Royce and Lopez.
Royce and Lopez. I didn't think you were there, so I was like scrolling feverishly up
just
and down.
Just got back. I really wanted to hear the Eddie Thorpe thoughts, but there's tape for that, so I'll hear it.
Yeah, you can listen to the show like everybody else. But no, Royce Lopez, I agree 100% with you here on this too. I think this is probably Electra Lopez's best match, hands down, easily. I was very surprised how she came along here. Now, granted, this was a taped show, so they could have had some you know, editing wonders to make her look a little bit better, but. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt anyway. And if that is what it was, you know, if that isn't what it was and wasn't editing and, you know, it was just actually legit skill, in her training and whatever, like I got to give her credit. She looked great. This whole angle with her and Royce, I was really hoping that they would get back to sooner than they did. I was actually getting, I wouldn't say I was like super invested in it. I mean, it's a mid-card story, but I kind of liked what they had going on, you know, with Royce being a little timid and kind of like, you know, somebody that people could walk all over, and, you know, Electra Lopez, like, no, come on, get a backbone, let's go. And she finally got a backbone, but it wasn't quite in the way that Lopez expected. And then they wait a month, or it was like maybe 5-6 weeks. I forget how many weeks it was. It was at least a month before they finally blow that off. So kind of lost any heat that it had. Granted, they did do a little bit, hey, last month this happened, spot before the match. But I don't know. I feel like if they even cared about this, they would have done something, you know, where it was only a 2-minute match. They could have found a way to put it, on one of the shows the last 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. Real quick, just because you didn't hear it, with Eddie Thorpe, I haven't really seen much of his stuff. I mean, you know, I like New Japan, but I don't keep up with New Japan. So I'm really curious to see what he does. I love the presentation. I really liked what he brought tonight. yeah, the like I said, the music and the entrance was great. I thought that was, like, I could see that being a big thing, and clearly, you know, entrances I feel like are a good indicator on where the company also sees you. So I feel like that's probably a good thing for him too. But yeah, that's more or less what I said. I probably said a couple other things too, but it's kind of the gist of it. But yeah, I'll throw it back to you now that you're back.
I miss his old hairstyle. And you folks don't know what his old hairstyle was, but I promise you, I like it more. But I don't know. I guess I'll have to live with it. The one thing he retained is the boots. Long white boots with red tassels. That was part of his gear on New Japan Strong. So there you go. That's the only thing. And now I can't think of
old
music.
The old hair. The old hair is much cooler.
Yes. I know his music. Like, when I try to think of his music, I just think of his music from New Japan Strong, which wouldn't really work with the entrance he's doing now. I approve, because they changed the presentation, so whatever. Okay, Mackenzie Mitchell talked to Gallus. Gallus is just so cool and so fun, and I love them. Nate, have you seen Goodfellas?
You think I'm funny? What kind of funny question is that? It's one. I'm Italian. Even with the last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian.
You've always sounded kind of Italian to me, but I thought it would be stupid to ask you if you were. What with your name being Lindbergh?
Right.
So, but you do look it, now that I think about it for a second.
Yep.
So I guess that's not shocking.
It's all my mother's side.
Killed anyone? Like mafia stuff? You know what? You don't have to answer that.
We don't talk about these things. Okay.
So I really dug this Bloodline thing with them. I mean, when I think about it, it's like, okay, obviously the Bloodline was going to do a Goodfellas thing. And obviously it's going to be this scene. And obviously it's going to be Roman and Paul Heyman in these roles. I thought it was a fun use of Solo. Solo can do more without anything on his face than almost anybody in the game. And Jimmy and Jay as instigators, kind of, both of them playing the role of Ray Liotta at the same time, I think worked. Just really good stuff there, fun stuff there. Pretty deadly. They weren't given any good lines this week. Like, they had all these segments. They were never given a particularly good line. There was some fun stuff in camera work and stuff like that with the hand-holding and stuff. But I point all this out to say that it didn't matter that they weren't being given good material, because they're both so good at their characters that this was still kind of fun. Anything else on, I guess, the show at all? Otherwise, I will get to our one email, Nate.
Yeah, so just kind of, you know, to touch on these things, pretty deadly. I agree. They didn't really have any major standout lines, but man, their charisma is off the charts. I feel like they make a great choice as the host for Stand and Deliver. I think I'd rather see them in action somewhere, but where, you know, unless they were in the tag team match, but you know, whatever, they've had so many shots at the tag team titles at this point. Let them do something a little bit different. So, I'm cool with that, the Gallus segment I thought was fine. The Goodfellas segment, I think that commercial actually debuted last night. I saw that on Reddit. Like, I want to say it was either first thing this morning or late last night. Oh my God, though, it's so well done. Absolutely so well done. It's probably been a good like 10 years since I've seen Goodfellas, but I mean, that scene is absolutely iconic. And Paul Heyman just did such a great job there. I feel like the last time they went Hollywood, what was that? I forget which WrestleMania it was, but it was like 2008, 2007, something like that. And they did all of those kind of, movie trailer spoofs, the one with the Braveheart and all of that. Those were done beautifully and brilliantly as well. So I'm glad to see they're kind of keeping that tradition, like, and then they were able to produce something quite, you know, just as good, if not better than maybe some of the other ones. Cause man, like you said, the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa, he stood out and he didn't at the same time. Like I've watched that segment now three times. I watched it twice when I saw it on Reddit, and then I watched it obviously again tonight. And the first time I watched it, I didn't notice Sikoa that much. And then the second time I really watched him, and it was like, oh, man, like you said, he can say so much without actually saying anything. It's fantastic. Other than that, let's get to Catani's email.
Yes, indeed. And I feel like, you know what? If you had told me 8 years ago, like, hey, so in 8 years, Roman's not only still going to be getting a main event push, but he's going to be playing the part of Robert De Niro in Goodfellas in a segment, I would have been like, cool, see you never. And I would have intentionally, spontaneously combusted, so I was not on this earth anymore. And now, 8 years later, he's playing such a good heel, just so perfectly cast, finally, that I see it and I'm like, who else? Who else would be in this role? Okay. Email comes from Kevin Catani. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Here we are at the precipice of WrestleMania weekend, and it looks like we're in for an entertaining weekend of wrestling. I feel like this is the event that has the most multi-person / multi-team matches of any recent NXT PLE. It probably is, but I'm not even sure, which tells you that they do way too many. While more people in matches can lead to sloppiness and or less focus on performers, such formats also open the door to more storyline potential. With that in mind, what is one storyline or program that you feel confident we'll see post-SAD, and what is one storyline or program you'd love to see fantasy booking-wise? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB/bonus point. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Yeah, so I think that there's a lot of storyline potential coming out of this. Wish I knew who was going to be called up, because then I would know who wasn't going to be in any storylines at all. One thing I'm expecting to see is Tiffany Stratton getting real, real close to winning this match, and Roxanne Perez eventually winning this match. So we're going to see that person who is the next major challenger almost win this match. And I think that'll be Tiffany. And maybe she'll also have something in the match with Indy. So first she has to beat Indy on her way to getting to Roxanne. That is something I'm expecting. And I didn't know how I was going to answer that. I didn't look at this before I read it out loud, but that's just something that immediately occurred to me. We saw Ilya and JD. It seems like there could be more meat on that bone. But there's just a wealth of things that could come out of the NXT North American Championship picture, because it seems like that men's mid-card is just booked in such a way that a guy can lean heel or face a little bit if he has to. And it just kind of works. Like, they just keep getting away with that. So I don't know who I'm expecting to come out of that. But, wow, I feel like, you know, a match that I wanted to see and I just thought of is Ilya Dragunov versus Nathan Frazer. I want to see Frazer. This is kind of a cheat because Frazer's not in that match, but whatever. I feel like he works a little more than Axiom, and it's because he's a little more of an underdog. And I expect Ilya would win this match, but Ilya's just so mean and cruel and relentless, and Frazer is just so upstanding and clever and resourceful. I just think that slight styles clash could be really interesting, and watching Ilya just kind of go crazy because the usual stuff isn't working because Frazer knows how to absorb it. I think that could be really, really interesting. Nate, apparently I just opened my mouth and stuff falls out of it that I agree with. Glad that happened, and I didn't really have to think about this one. What do you think?
Well, there you go. There you go, because I had to think about it a little bit. So where I definitely see what you said, so I'm going to kind of go a bit of a different direction. One feud that I definitely see kind of coming out of Stand and Deliver that probably is going to continue is this feud between Schism and Chase U. Because obviously, you know, we're trying to see, I think here, who is going to win control over Chase University or something like that. So I feel like that's probably going to wind up continuing, especially if Schism wins. I know we talked about Chase, you probably taking the win, but that's something I probably see coming out of there. But like you said, I think the one that really stands out is probably something in the North American title match. You know, to me, there's so many different directions that could go. You know, after the fact, you know, like you said, Ilya and JD is probably what stands out to me the most. Farrah's fantasy booking goes, and this is really fantasy booking because it also means that we can heal injuries with the snap of a finger. But with Gargano back in NXT, give me Ciampa and just let them have like a 6-month feud.
All righty, tidy whities. I've never said that on
that's
this
fantastic
podcast.
I'm stealing that.
That's a thing. I got it from my little brother when he was like 8. When he picked it up from school. So there you go. I'm passing on the savings to you, the listener. So there you go. Saturday, I don't know what it's going to look like as far as when we're going to do a show. I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch the show because I'm going to get home from work. I'm going to want to watch WrestleMania, but Stand and Deliver is going to be on my plate also. I just don't know, folks. A lot of time between now and then to figure it out. So I will, and I will talk about Stand and Deliver, if not on some post-show, at least a week from today. Okay, so that is it, and we will see you next week. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Nathan?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, and one way or another, like you said, we will have some sort of a roundtable, VIP roundtable afterwards. I'll be there. I just don't know who's going to be with me.
All right. Cheers, folks. See you in 7. Kaboom, baby.